the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
So we're joined now by the former Munster in Ireland and British and Irish Lions scrum half, Conor Murray, who has written his memoir, Cloud Nine, My Life in Rugby. Conor, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
Could I just clarify something? At the end of last season, when you finished with Munster, you sort of left it open that you might continue playing elsewhere. But yeah, are you retired now, or are you going to go to somewhere like Japan or Australia like Rob Kearney did?
I am officially retired, yeah. I think I just left it open-ended because it was, the body felt great, and I didn't know whether I wanted to keep playing or not. And obviously, if you announce your retirement, you kind of, you shut one door. So I just left it open-ended. Basically, I think I've squeezed most or everything out of myself in Ireland, you know, with my club and my country. So to keep playing, it would have really been, honestly, for a life experience, it would have been somewhere really nice for my wife Joanna and our son Alfie to live for a year or 6 months. And yeah, look, the right option didn't really come across the table. So you know, there was a couple of offers, and for example, one in Japan, like 5 hours outside of Tokyo. And while we were chatting before, Japan's an amazing country. Would Joanna and Alfie just be in the apartment for the majority of those 6 months, so far away from home? And I suppose we're at a stage of our life where, you know, we need that support network around us. And yeah, look, I'm a long way of answering it, but I'm happy to hang up the boots. I feel I've done all I can do, and looking forward to the next chapter.
Will you continue, though, to have an involvement in rugby? Would you ever be interested in coaching? Or you've done a bit of punditry, writing for the Irish Times, appearing on Sky Sports during the Lions Tour. Yeah. Are you looking to stay in rugby?
Yeah, I am. I don't think I'll do coaching. I just don't think it's for me.
Why not?
I don't think I would have the love to coach. And I've seen world-class coaches in operation, and you really need to be fully committed to it. So I don't think coaching is an option for me. I think it's really important to give back as well. So if there's a young scrum half and, you know, he wants to do a few sessions or have a chat, like, I think that's something that I owe back to the game that gave me so much. But in terms of staying connected, I really enjoyed the summer with the Sky Sports punditry and the writing for the Times. And it also reminded me that I need to stay close to the game. This game has given me so much for the last 16, 17 years. So it's a nice way to stay connected to it. You know, I think if you cut yourself off completely to rugby, it probably isn't a good healthy thing to do. So I enjoyed it. And, you know, I think we have rugby knowledge to share with people. And it's an enjoyable way to, I suppose, spend a Saturday afternoon.
But you are looking to do change in your life, because you're doing something which I think is very unusual for people to do here in Ireland, which is move from the south to the north. You're actually going to move from Limerick to Derry. Tell us about that.
Yeah, yeah. Joanna won that battle. Yeah, so I think it's just a fresh start. It's obviously, I've spent a lot of time up in Derry with my wife being from there. It's a beautiful city, like beautiful restaurants, bars, cafes. We'll be happy up there. And I think most importantly, you know, Joanna's got quite a big family with loads of nieces and nephews, and she's four brothers all married. And there's just a really nice support network up there. And we really do see ourselves being quite happy there for, I suppose, the medium to long term. So it's coincided with me retiring from rugby and, you know, a bit of a fresh start. And we're not too far up the road.
No, it's not as far as it used to be now. Yeah. The roads are better. But also, one of the things that's very strong in the book is about the terrible experience that your father had a couple of years ago when he was nearly killed, when he was knocked off his bike by an individual who got a limited sentence given that he had a history of offending on the roads as well. How is your father now?
He's good. He's great. Thank you. He was in Thomond Park last night for the launch of the book, and he was having his few pints, and he was in great form. And he's, I don't know why I always refer to this, but he's golfing 3 or 4 times a week like he used to. And, you know, that's
and back on his bike as well.
Yeah. So he was actually back on it way before he probably should have been. I think he just needed a mental, I don't know, clarity to get back on and prove that he could do it again. So look, very, very lucky. Quite a difficult time, obviously.
It was life-changing for him. Mm. But how was it? Was it life-changing for you as well?
Yeah, yeah. And my mom and my sisters and, you know, his family. It just shows you how delicate life is, really. My dad's been involved in cycling for his whole life, triathlons, and he worked with the Tour de France as a cameraman on a motorbike and all these things. So it's in his DNA. And I do remember a couple of times when I was younger, he'd go out for a meet or a cycle with a big group of people. And I remember him coming home a couple of times and being like, yeah, one of the lads got a bang or fell off and unfortunately didn't make it. And I didn't realize how often things like that can happen. So just obviously when it happened, my dad, a different kind of scenario with being knocked down, but it just shows you how grateful you are for him to still be here, for us to have an appreciation of him being here. Made our family tighter, or he went through hell, really. And I suppose that, you know, a lot of good has come from it on the other side of it. You know, we're very, very grateful and all that now, but I suppose watching him, he didn't just lie in bed and get better. Like, he had to work really hard on his rehab and be really diligent and pretty much learn how to walk. And, you know, he does have side effects still from it, but overall, look, he's got a good quality of life. He's very grateful to still be here. We're very grateful for him to have gotten through that time. And plenty of games of golf left in him.
You had an extraordinarily long career in rugby, and 125 Ireland caps. You were at 4 Rugby World Cups, won the Six Nations 5 times, 2 Grand Slams in that, 3 British and Irish Lions tours, and captaining the team in 2021. And yet there's an awful lot of attention been paid over the last couple of days as to perhaps a degree of dissatisfaction that you might feel with your Munster career.
Yeah. I suppose when I was approached to do a book, I was you don't have to do a book, you know, it's something I chose to do. And I did it. I said I would do it and be honest with myself and be honest with my opinions, because I don't want, sometimes you see books that are just out there and you can nearly tell that they're just doing it for the sake of doing it. I really wanted to express all the good times. Like, there's loads of good times in the book, but obviously, you know, the attention the last couple of days is on the Munster stuff, and I feel I needed to say it because that's how I felt at the time. Whether it be, you know, we talk about the signings and things like that, and frustration with me and a few other senior players that we weren't consulted on. Then maybe some lads were. I wasn't, in a few of the senior players I spoke to weren't either. And you're kind of, these signings probably weren't up to the standard. I know I used the word dud in the book, it's probably been a bit harsh, but they weren't up to the standard that we were expecting. And then we were left kind of scratching our heads as to who made the decision. Like, and we knew a teammate of this player that's come in, and we could have easily reached out to him and said, what's this guy like? Is like, ability wise or like personality wise, would he fit into the Munster culture? And there's a few, I think, just frustrations. Like, they came to me during my Munster year, because I started off playing for Munster in 2011. They were relatively fresh off winning the European Cups, and I won the Magnus League in 2011 with Munster, and I just assumed that it would continue like that. And I remember saying to my friends, maybe getting ahead of myself a bit, but I was like, I wonder when I'll win a European Cup, because it just seemed to be the way things were done. And it obviously didn't pan out like that. Leinster overtook us and went on to win 4 of them. And, you know, that's where the frustration lies with me and maybe Earlsey or, you know,
Peter O'Mahony.
Yeah,
and others.
These guys that we can all look at ourselves now knowing that we gave everything to Munster. And, you know, there's just certain frustrations that I think should be voiced, really.
You came into the Munster team and the Ireland team, and there was a sort of a changeover taking place. In the previous decade, Munster had been dominant and had dominated the Irish team, and there was, I suppose, a bit of an envy and jealousy on the part of Leinster. And then from 2009 and the famous day in Croke Park onwards, Leinster became dominant as a team and also in supplying the Irish team. What was that like to be one of the Munster players who was sort of watching Leinster in the ascendancy?
Yeah, it was it was tough. Like, look, I've great friends in Leinster and they fully deserved what they've done over the past decade, I suppose. But me, Pete, Earlsy to an extent, I know he has a European medal, he doesn't really count it because he felt he didn't contribute too much. But we came into Munster and that was the standard, really. And every year we'd sit down in June or July, first day of pre-season, and put it up, our goal setting, win the European Cup. And at the start, for the first few years, it was a real legitimate target that we felt that we could achieve. And then to fast forward to the last few years, our goal setting meetings are, let's try and make it out of our group. And you're kind of like, we started this, we took over the reins here, and this is where we're at. And it was weird, you know, my first time going into an Irish squad, like it was littered with Munster players, and now lately it's, you know, there's less and less. So that's why I feel like right to voice these opinions.
How do you think can it be solved?
I think the signing thing. We have signed some really good players that have made such a great impact. And like, you look at Dougie Howlett, Ruatapoki, and even nowadays Alex Nankivell, who's world class. So there's really good signings in there as well. I think just at times, senior players need to just be consulted. And, you know, because we all play rugby around the world on international stages. So we will always know a fella who knows a fella, and we can just get a little sense of what someone's like. You know what I mean? So that's just something that kind of annoyed a few of us through our time.
But is a lot of it down to money and population, that the money is in Dublin to support Leinster and they have all the schools that are providing the players and there's multiple players for every position, and that with the best will in the world, and I say this as a Cork man and as a loyal Munster supporter for many years, there just isn't the playing population developing the players down in Munster.
You can 100% argue that, and I was chatting to Earlsy last night, Keith Earls, about this last night, but some of the signings we made, we knew how much they were on, and we knew we could have got a better player for that type of money. So just those situations where the money's available to sign someone 2 or 3 years, and we could have maybe had an impact and said, look, we've chatted to people, he doesn't fit the bill here. He wouldn't be a good fit here. Let's go get someone else for the same money.
Who was making those decisions? Was that been made by the senior coaches who were coaching the team? Or were those decisions been made by sort of higher ups?
I think they're higher ups. Yeah, I think they are higher ups. So it would be, I just think it essentially comes from a place of loving Munster. Like, Munster's the team I grew up wanting to represent, the jersey I wanted to wear. So it comes from a place of like wanting to see Munster do well. And that's something I felt and I feel that Munster could do better.
I don't know if you saw Matt Williams writing in the Irish Times suggesting that it isn't the fault of all the coaches, that Munster have had very good coaches over the last decade who've gone on to achieve an awful lot after they left Munster. Now, I think Razzy Erasmus left because of the draw, as it wasn't that Munster wanted to get rid of him.
Yeah, no, yeah.
But Johan van Graan has been successful with Bath. You know, other coaches, Rob Penny has been successful as well.
Yeah.
In that, is it down to times to the players not doing what the coaches want?
Yeah, and that's why that's exactly why I would find it really hard to say while you're playing, because people can say exactly what you said there about it's down to the players need to perform. But I think when you look at it from afar, when you're removed from it, I think you have I'm more comfortable talking about it now because I'm not playing, and I can say, looking back on certain times, we were all performing, and maybe the signings we made were just the weakness in the team, or we felt we needed to be stronger in certain areas of the pitch and we didn't recruit in that area. And it's easier to say it now because you can stand by it and be like, no, we were playing, the lads you picked were playing well that for that period. Like, so we needed maybe bolstering in certain areas. Yeah, while you're playing, it's very hard to say that because people can just turn around and say, well, you were out on the pitch, you lost. But like, even towards the end, but we travelled some days like the cheapest travel route, you know, and the players were wrecked by the time we arrived to, for example, in Zebra, which Munster lost first time ever. And I was involved that day, and you can hold my hand up and say we didn't play as well as we should have. But if you're required to be professional, then you should travel as best you can and give yourself the best chance to perform, whether it be Zebra or whether it be a higher end team.
But yet you did win the URC in 2023. I mean, you said when you won 2011, the Magnus League as it was known then, it was a comeback to win in 2023, wasn't it? So why did you not kick on from there, do you think?
Many reasons. Part of the reason we felt as players we won in 23, now we did have great coaches. Obviously, I had a strange relationship with one of them, but that running in that URC 23 season, we as players, we felt we were overtraining. We weren't fresh enough when we arrived to games, and the senior players group just kind of suggested or stood up and said, we need to like cut down training completely here. We're at the end of the season. We need to be fresh going into games. We're fit. We don't need to get any fitter here. We feel good. The priority is to arrive at a game fresh. And then for the run in for that URC win, we barely trained. Our training sessions were really short.
Are you suggesting that the players took control of the group away from the coaches?
We didn't take full control, but we just felt quite strongly that we need to taper off during the week so we can be fresh for the weekend. And then we went on this incredible run. Like, the game plan was great. The coaches gave us such a good game plan. The style of rugby we were playing was great. But we went on a great run, six games away from home, and we win the URC in the sixth one.
Who was the coach you weren't getting on with? Graham Rowntree, the head coach, was it?
I wouldn't say like we weren't getting on. We were definitely cordial to each other, and we were both
professional.
But
the relationship should be more than that, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it was just a little bit off. I felt a little bit, like I've said it already, a little bit disrespected towards the running of my Munster career. And I really want to stress that I'm okay with, or I understand changing up the guard, like new players coming in and filling positions. It was the treatment, like getting 3 or 4 minutes here or there.
Well, yeah, was it better in Ireland? Because you did become, and I often wondered, you know, how difficult is it when you're used to being the main man and suddenly Jameson Gibson Park comes along and becomes the main scrum half and you're there as a backup. And then the same thing happens to you in Munster. Craig Casey is the young fella coming along. Mm-hmm. He starts getting more and more time. What's that like for you? Or is there an acceptance? Okay, physically, I don't have as many minutes in me as I used to have. Maybe I'm not. Or do you start thinking, well, I know things. I know how to do things. Yeah. I should be the starting man.
Yeah, like, sorry, that competitive edge never goes. It doesn't. But then there's also, so like, I would train as if I was starting and, you know, and expect it. And, but there's also, I think I'm quite level-headed, and I know at times, you know, the time will be up and you'll take another role. So in Munster, the same thing happened. Well, the Munster, the Irish one was delayed because that was part of my frustration, was I would be in the 23 with Ireland and come back to Munster and then not be involved. And you're kind of like, well, that's international, this is club, and I'm getting through. So Munster was frustrating towards the end. I just didn't feel I was getting the rewards. My abilities were still capable of achieving. And then with Ireland, it felt a lot different because, yes, Jameson arrived and I kept him at bay for a couple of years, but like, fantastic player, great fella. He took over and he was number one. But I still felt valued by Andy. I felt, you know, I was getting a decent amount of game time. The odd game, like, he'd trust you, he'd play you, he'd start you, or, you know what I mean? I still felt, and relationship-wise, I've a fantastic relationship with Andy, and, you know, he left me under no doubt as to where I stood, and it was never closed. Like, he said, if you get back playing like unbelievably well, you'll be back in. But for now, you're doing a great job. What you're doing
in the generation before you, and I haven't come towards the close on this, but there was always a feeling that it was Munster first and Ireland second. Did it become for you almost that there was more pleasure in playing for Ireland than there was in playing for Munster, despite the fact that you grew up with Munster and loved all of that?
Yeah, because I was happier in Irish camp, because I felt like I was a part of the squad. I felt valued. And then with Munster, like, I got on really well with the players, so well with the players that I grew up with, the younger lads that were coming into the squad. And that's why I gave it my all until literally the last kick of the ball against Sharks. And I'm really proud I stuck at it. But no, like, I think it's in human nature. Like, if you're not getting, I suppose, the respect you deserve in one place, you're going to enjoy the other place a little bit better, aren't you? So just towards the end, there was a little bit of conflict there, but I would stress, and we spoke about it last night, the overall
story in the book is like a love letter to Munster. Like I grew up wanting to play with Munster. I had the best days of my life in a Munster jersey. But obviously our people are going to want to talk about the last 2 years, because with me saying it, and like there's a few other bits, you know, with coaches coming and going, people want to know about it.
Well, one final question. So given that you're moving to Derry, in future, are you going to be going to games in Thomond Park, or will you be driving over to Ravenhill to watch matches?
It'll be Thomond Park for forever, definitely. Even if it's a 5-hour drive, we'll get Alfie down there. He needs to experience it.
Conor Murray, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Cloud9, My Life in Rugby is the book.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.